Good evening. I'd like to call the May 4th, 2021 Lower Frederick Township Board of Supervisors General Meeting to order. The time is approximately 7:03 p.m. All rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag.
Of the United States of America.
Republic for which it stands, one republic nation, under God, indivisible,
liberty and justice for all.
Liberty and justice for all. Great, thank you. Roll call, let the record reflect that all five board members are present at tonight's meeting, as well as all staff that are listed on the agenda, which includes our manager, Mark Hudson, Paul Maxey, Chief of Police, Carol Schuler, our engineer, and Peter Nelson, our solicitor. Announcements are our standard announcements, which I will read now. Township meetings are recorded for the purpose of preparing minutes, and the recording is destroyed 6 months after the minutes are approved. The meeting will also be recorded by the teleconference provider, which in our case is Zoom. It's requested that all persons wishing to speak before the board shall state their name, address, and the subject matter upon which they wish to speak for the record. In the interest of facilitating the business of the board, all persons addressing the board shall be limited to 2 minutes, unless such time is extended by the chair for good cause. The Board of Supervisors will provide a reasonable opportunity for citizens to comment on any non-agenda items after all agenda items have been addressed, but prior to the adjournment of the public meeting. Meeting attendees will be able to ask questions at specific times during the meeting through chat or audio, meaning that you'll be unmuted, or by sending an email to Mark Hudson, our manager. His email address is manager@lowerfrederick.org. You can also call the township office number, and that will also ring through to our manager. Mark, can you announce executive sessions, please?
Yes, we had an executive session on Thursday, April 29th to discuss legal.
Great, thank you. And that brings us to our first item tonight, which is the update Zieglerville Road home heating oil release.
Mark, again, this is the same update I've given at the last meeting. The Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection will have a representative attend our May 25th meeting to discuss their findings from the assessment that they completed at the site in February of this year.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Yep. Our next agenda item for tonight is regarding Melbourne Hill, discussing a request for an additional time extension. At this point, I'd like to turn things over to our solicitor, Peter Nelson, who will describe the situation for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we have before us a request dated April 26th, 2021, seeking an additional 6 month extension to the 5 year, for in layman's term, grandfather period given to developers under Section 508(4) of the MPC, which basically states that once a developer files a land development plan, they are protected from any changes in ordinances that would have an adverse effect upon their development of that plan for 5 years. This plan, actually, if people are familiar with history, has been around a lot longer, but there have been some extensions of this five-year period during the Great Recession under the Permit Extension Act. It extended it up until approximately December of 2019. And then on December 3rd of 2019, the board at that point in time, in response to earlier request for an extension, agreed to extend this protection until May 8th, 2021, together with giving the developer the option to request yet another extension. And that is what the developer is doing right now. The practical effect of this extension would be that the developer would have now 6 more months in which to get their plans approved as they are currently filed under the conditional use and preliminary plan approvals they received back in, I think, in 2005 and 2006, if I remember correctly. If the board decides not to grant this request on May 18th, or sorry, on May 8th, this protection would end, which would mean the developer would need, the developer plan does not disappear, is not automatically rejected, but rather the developer would be obligated to bring the plan into compliance with the ordinances that are in place today, as opposed to the ordinances that were in place back in 2005 or 2004 when this project was first submitted to the township. So one of the big issues before the board, I think, is to discuss what are the advantages of granting the extension, what conditions are currently imposed upon this project that, you know, arguably could not be imposed upon a new plan or revised plan, and what advantages are gained by the township and the community by letting this protection lapse and bringing this plan into compliance with our current ordinances. If the board wishes, I can go into greater depth into, you know, what items are going to be lost if the extension is not granted, or, you know, the board can start this discussion now and I can add them later if necessary.
Peter, we have Greg with us and Ben, so I don't know if they want to say anything.
Okay. Yeah, actually, that'd probably be a good idea to let them speak if they wish.
Thank you, Peter, and thank you, Mark. Good evening, everyone. Greg Edelman here on behalf of the applicant. Peter did summarize the request correctly, we were in front of you a few months ago discussing certain items and conditions of conditional use and preliminary approval that are still outstanding that the applicant continues to work on, including responding to all of the township engineer's technical comments, which the applicant did and resubmitted early to mid-April last month. And we've continued to try to progress through on satisfying a lot of those conditions of conditional use approval, including trying to come up with a way to create a pedestrian connection to Cobble Park. So what we would ask the board to consider, and I think Peter touched on it, is there's a number of conditions from the conditional use approval that I think would no longer be supportable if we were required to file a new application under the current zoning and proceed from the beginning again. The development overall would look very similar. It might be a little bit less dense, than what's currently pending, but we've evaluated it. It's something that we would continue to pursue, but I think you would see a lot of the conditions that the board is currently negotiating with the applicant go away. And we'd be, you know, starting from scratch, obviously under your current ordinances, but it would really put the applicant in a position of no choice. They own the property, so they're going to continue to try to develop it. We'd request the board continue to give us time to work through the township engineer's comments, as well as try to come up with amenable solutions and resolutions to the outstanding conditions of approval, as we discussed a few months ago and as we've continued to do, whether that's the total number of grinder pumps, trail connections, additional sewage facilities planning, contributions in lieu of some of the other items that we had discussed. All of those things continue to be in play. If we were required to go back from the beginning, all of those things disappear. And I think you'd wind up with a much more bare bones type of conditional use approval. At least the applicant wouldn't be agreeing to all of those types of conditions in this current environment. And especially if the revised plan, the new plan under the new ordinance has fewer units, there clearly would be less financial means to be able to do some of these additional offsite improvements, including connecting the homes on Little Road that they're not required to run a sewer main to. So there's lots of advantages, I think, for the township's end in terms of mitigating other site impacts that this current plan and application provides versus sending us back to, you know, ground zero and starting again. So I'd ask the board to consider extending the option that we believe was agreed to back in December of 2019 and that we're exercising now, and that we can continue to work diligently. There was a thought of my requesting an even longer period of time for the township to consider, but we thought that in you know, a show of good faith, that we should continue to move forward, and that way every 6 months or so the township can look at where we are, what's been resolved, what's still outstanding, rather than give too long of a leash in terms of the project's continuity. So at this point, I don't think I have anything else to add. I don't know if Ben has anything else to add, given that he has some more history on the project than I do. But at this point, we just request the township agree to the option that was originally discussed back in this December of 2019.
Hi, Greg. This is Marla, as the only person on this current board who was on that board in that meeting, where Carl Wiener was present and Ben Goldthorpe. That board did not agree to another extension. That board said, you may come back and ask for another extension.
Okay, that's your recollection.
You could listen to the video. And so what you said in your letter, having an option to obtain, it was really having an option to request.
Okay, I read the minutes. The minutes seemed to indicate two different things in two different locations.
I can't speak to that, but I was in that meeting and that's what I remember. But
okay. Yeah, Marla, I didn't see
it. There was no commitment to grant another approval. There was a commitment to consider another extension.
Okay. And Greg, if I can just step in here, there is a principle, the governmental versus proprietary function principle, that basically says, you know, for governmental functions, a prior board can't bind a future board in making promises such as this one. And I would, you know, say, even if they did explicitly make such a promise back in December of 2019, that was a different board that really couldn't bind this board into having to grant this extension. So that, you know, that's just my legal opinion.
I understand, Peter. I was reading off of the minutes. The minutes seemed to indicate that the parties were agreeable on an option. Marla, if you remember it differently, then I, you know, I don't have anything to refute that. I'm not going to say you're wrong or I'm right. I just told you what I was basing it off what was in the minutes. Having said that, Peter, I agree to the extent that there's no actual, you know, court-approved settlement agreement here, which there isn't. Obviously, the boards as a governmental body have discretion in terms of approving such matters. I'm not going to refute that either. Having said that, I still think the main tenor and the premise of what I said stands, whether it's considered to be an option exercisable by the developer or an option at the discretion of the board. The facts are still the same. You know, we're here trying to fulfill these conditions of the original conditional use approval that I think go away if we're sent back to the beginning. And we've made progress. We continue to make progress responding to the township's comments. And obviously, based upon the last discussion we had a few months ago, I think there's definitely a middle ground that's achievable in terms of some of the big ticket items that we've discussed. So I'd like to continue those discussions and continue working forward on the pending final plan and move from there rather than start again and not have any of those conditions and deal with something completely different.
Greg, this is Chuck Geiser. question for you. You've mentioned ongoing negotiations and you've mentioned big ticket items. And the last mm-hmm. time we spoke was at a meeting like this in January the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, there has been no further negotiation with the townships on it. My question is, why would you proceed with a plan and leave all of these big ticket items, as you phrase them, sort of hanging, and now you're coming back and you're saying you want to talk about the big ticket items? I'm a little confused about your approach here.
Sure, Chuck, I'll be happy to explain that. For about 5 to 6 months, we requested the township to provide us with a review letter of our resubmitted plan in July, and the township refused while we were discussing the other big ticket items. We finally got that review letter in December, and it took our engineer approximately 2.5 to 3 months to go through everything and re-engineer the plans so that we can try to eliminate a lot of the substantial issues in terms of stormwater and other site impacts. Some additional items have come up, including the township engineer commenting about the potential presence of wetlands on the property that could impact the developable area of the property that we now have to look into. And that information was just supplied to us very recently, despite this project having been out here for over 10 plus years. So we have lots of new items that we're dealing with that could impact the big ticket items. We're trying to resolve the actual layout of some of the plan items at this point. And we are continuing to work on some of the big ticket items, such as trying to get the homeowners to agree to a pedestrian connection to Cobble Park. We have not come back to the township yet with respect to an additional follow-up on the items we discussed 2 to 3 months ago. We intend to do so after we get another review from the township engineer with respect to the revised submission that was submitted in the middle of April. So we will continue to have discussions. They've moved a little bit slower than I would have hoped. Chuck, there's also another issue in that our HOP application still hasn't been countersigned by and acknowledged by the township, and that's been in the township's hands for 8 to 10 months. So we'd like to think we're moving in good faith. I think the township continues to move in good faith. It's just not very fast. So that's why we're here asking for more time to continue to try to go through this process.
Carol, are you online?
Yes, sir.
Can you address the reason why the township hasn't agreed to sign off on the HOP application?
Oh, exactly, Mr. Nelson. The HOP application was supplied. Thank you for sharing the plan information. And it did not address the pedestrian issues that were part of the conditional use approval. I had concerns about the pedestrian crossing or lack thereof along Little Road. And it simply did not address all the conditions of approval that need to be on that PennDOT highway occupancy permit. And for that reason, I was not comfortable recommending the township sign off on a permit that didn't address the conditions.
We have not been notified of any of that in writing, Carol. I mean, we would have certainly responded months ago. This has been in the township's hand, and I have communicated with Mr. Nelson multiple times on the HOP mm-hmm. application. Look, I'm not questioning anybody's integrity here. I've known Peter for 20 years, and Carol, your reputation precedes yourself. I mean, as being a fair and equitable engineer for your municipal clients. Mr. Iser, we'll continue to go through these comments and respond to them. They just take a long time to do. It took longer than I would have hoped for our engineer to respond and resubmit as well. Ben can attest that he and I were basically calling Mr. Woodrow's office almost weekly for the past month and a half to try to get the revised plans in. But until we resolve some of these outstanding comments from Carol's letter and getting some of these other applications in, it's really hard to get to the end for these big ticket items, because we really need to know where everything stands in terms of the overall layout of the development.
Hey, Greg, this is Terry Bird. Question for you. Hey, how are you? So I'm just trying to keep track here. So you've mentioned the big ticket items a few times, and you mentioned pedestrian crossing. Can you, mm-hmm. Without detail on them, but can you just kind of spout off the other items?
Off the top of my head, I'd have to pull out the letter. I don't have it in front of me. I apologize, Terry. But They were some of the items in terms of the sewer contribution. I think that if you recall, we had talked about contributing some money in lieu of, because there were some improvements that were being proposed under the conditional use application that are no longer necessary or being proposed. Other items obviously are the extension of the sewer main to service the existing homes on Little Road. And then there were a couple other fairly substantial, I think, items in the overall letter that I had sent, and I think Mr. Nelson had responded to late fall, early winter last year. So I'd have to dig them out, but there are other big ticket items. And Peter, you can jump in if you remember them off the top of your head. But
this is the letter. You know, you sent me one, I sent you one back, and then you sent a final one in December.
Mm-hmm.
So the big ticket items were the connection of the houses on Little Road, mm-hmm. contribution by the developer to amending the Act 537 plan, contribution mm-hmm. by the developer towards the pump station, the number of grinder pumps, mm-hmm. The connection to Coble Park.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the Sachs Trail connection.
Right. I think that was there, but those are that's about it, Peter. I'm trying to remember if there's any others, but you know, there were some of them were sizable amounts, including the sewer contribution, I believe was the largest one that the board had communicated through Mr. Nelson to my client. My client responded and is continuing to be willing to discuss the amount of that contribution as well. So obviously we'd have to reach a resolution in order to be able to get an approval under those terms because of the conditions of the original conditional use approval.
Are there any other questions for the applicant?
I'm not sure this has anything to do with what we're talking about, but there was some plowing going on the property today. Is there some agricultural activity going on there?
I'm not aware. Ben, are you on?
Yeah, hi, everyone. Mr. Sachs, his team is going to be farming the property again this year.
So how will you do the infrastructure work when there's farming going on?
I'm not sure I understand your question, Marla. The farming will be going on while we're not developing. Once we are developing, the farming would cease in the area where it would be developed.
Okay.
Are there any other questions for the applicant, Peter? Is there any other?
No, I mean, I think we've, explored a lot of these issues. If you want, I can go over the conditions, at least that I think probably will go away if the extension is not granted, if you want me to. Otherwise, we're just looking, the applicant's looking for either a grant or denial of the request as it was forwarded to the township.
Now, I think we're aware of this situation. Personally, I have not seen, the progress on some of the bigger ticket discussions that I was hoping to see. Is there anybody in the board would like to make a motion on this current request that we have?
So just to clarify, this is Danworth. Peter, can you clarify the method by which we would make a motion and go forward? Do we make a motion to grant or make a motion not to grant? Is that basically how it would go forward?
Yeah, my recommendation is you can make a motion to grant the 6-month extension, which I believe would take us to November. You could extend it to November 8th, 2021, or you could, you know, make a motion to reject the request. You know, the April 26, 2021 request by the developer for a further extension.
Okay. I guess I'll make a motion to reject the request.
I will second.
Okay, so we have a motion made by Dan Orff to request the Melbourne Hill to reject Melbourne Hill's request for an extension of their MPC vesting period for 6 months. That was made by Dan Orff. We have a second, Noelle Halter. Is there any further discussion on the board or from the board? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Mr. Chairman, I think because it's this, the location of this matter on the agenda, we haven't had public comment yet. So okay. You're going to need to ask for public comment.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I need to close my window. There's somebody riding a dirt bike outside. So Mark, can we, any comments from the public? And I'm going to stand up and close the window. Sorry.
Mark, I see Brian. Go ahead.
Okay. Yep. Brian, go ahead and unmute. You're good. You're good to go, Brian.
Thank you. This is Brian Hill, 11 Zieglerville Road. I appreciate both parties coming to the table to discuss this project. I feel that there's been somewhat of a personal issue going on here, back and forth. I would ask that the board reconsider their thoughts. This has implications on the future financial status of our township. As many have known, the only project that really has gone on in our township with regards to investing in real estate taxes is the Arcadia program or Arcadia development. This development, yes, has been on the books for many years. It has gone through many renditions and several owners, but I'd ask that you would reconsider this project in its current conditional use project for the sake of our township and the future of our township.
Thank you, Brian.
Is there any other public comment, Mark?
No, but give me a second. We lost Noelle.
I just readmitted her as... Greg and Ben, just to let you know, one of our board members dropped off, so we're reconnecting her.
Yeah, I apologize. I'm here. It was a connectivity issue. I apologize.
I do not have any other public comment right now.
Okay. All right. So just restating, a motion has been made to reject Melbourne Hill Development's request for an extension to their MPC vesting period of 6 months. We've had a discussion, we've had public comment. So at this point, I'm gonna say, ask the board, all those supporting the motion made by Dan Orff to reject the request for an additional 6 month vesting period, say aye.
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 Any against? The motion carries unanimously.
Peter, will you confirm this in writing to me, please?
I was just about to ask you if you wanted a letter. Yes, I'll get one off to you this week, Greg.
Great, thank you. And yes. Thank you, board members, for your time this evening.
Yep.
Thank you.
Have a good night, everyone.
Good night. Okay, that brings us to our administrative actions portion of the meeting. We have approval of minutes from two meetings. One is our March 23rd, 2021 workshop meeting, And the other is our April 6, 2021 general meeting. If it suits the board, can we do a single motion to approve both sets of minutes?
Please do.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So would somebody like to make a motion or?
I'll so move.
Okay. Marla Hexter makes a motion to approve the March 23rd, 2021 workshop minutes as well as the April 6, 2021 general meeting minutes. We have a second. Chuck Yeiser will second. Is there any discussion? All in favor of approving the two sets of minutes as described, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Brings us to treasurer's report. Mark.
All right. Thank you. The cash balance in the general fund as of March 31st is $1,699,313.02. The cash balance in the sewer fund as of April 30th, for both of these is $368,309.14. The list of checks in the general fund is $99,548.99. The list of checks in the sewer fund total $282,539.64. This includes a check for our mid-year loan, sewer loan payment, which for this mid-year is in the amount of $253,232. During the month of April, information was still collected and sent to the township auditor, and we worked on police pension paperwork.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Any questions for our manager? Hearing none, I guess we need a motion to approve the checks as described in the general fund and the sewer fund.
Yes.
I'll make the motion.
Oh, go ahead. Okay. Dan Orff will move that we approve the checks.
A second.
Dan Orff makes the motion. Noel Halter seconds. This is to approve the list of checks as described by our manager in the general fund and the sewer fund. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the list of checks as described by our manager in the general fund and the sewer fund, say aye.
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 Aye. Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. That brings us to public comment on agenda items.
I do not have anything.
Okay. We will then move on to our engineer report, Carol Schuler.
Thank you, Mr. Yeiser. Very brief report tonight to explain that on the agenda this evening is acceptance of the ultimate right-of-way dedication from a 2006 subdivision. The offer of ultimate right-of-way was listed on the Eisenhart-Sabia Minor Subdivision Plan recorded in 2006. But was never formally accepted by the township. Accepting this right-of-way clarifies the right-of-way line of Riverside Avenue in front of 101 Bavington. That's the only item on my report tonight, but I'd be happy to address any questions.
Mark, you have a slide there. Can you show that?
Yep.
Just so people know what it is being talked about. Okay.
So it's this area in here.
Are there any questions for our engineer on this request for approval?
Hey, this is Dan Orff. Carol, just to provide the general public a little bit more explanation as a train goes by. If you could just explain that this is just something that was overlooked at some point in time and it's just cleaning up a missed T-crossing and an I-dotting, right?
That's a pretty good explanation right there, Dan. So this was offered at the time of subdivision. In larger subdivisions, the township accepts these after the improvements are done. There were no improvements associated with this, and it just was quite simply overlooked by the administration at that time, and this is really just cleaning up a loose end. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for our engineer? Any questions from the public on this?
I do not see anything, Chuck.
Okay. So do we have a motion for approving resolution 2021R-15, which is the acceptance of an offer of dedication of an additional right-of-way of Riverside Avenue for public road purposes in connection with certain subdivision known as the Eisenhart Sabia?
Also moved.
Also moved.
Okay. Marla Hexter makes the motion. Noel Halter seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor of approving resolution 2021R-15 as described by me, say aye.
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 Any against? The motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Mark,
yes.
once you get that signed, you need to send it to me so I can get it recorded.
Yep, not a problem.
Thank you.
So that brings us to our township staff reports, and we will start with Police Chief Maxey. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you, Chuck. Relatively brief report tonight for the board. During the month of April, we had 299 calls for service. And I also wanted to report back to the board that as of the other day, we have taken possession of the provision body cameras that the board had approved and we had ordered. And we were on track for our June 1st rollout date so that all the officers will be trained by that point and we will have the system up and running. I also wanted to just take a moment and discuss the fact that the police department and the township has hired two new police officers. And I'd like to just explain to the public a little bit about each officer. We hired a gentleman by the name of Brian Cass. Brian comes to us from West Pottsgrove Township. Brian has spent 20 years with West Pottsgrove, and he rose to the rank of corporal. Prior to work with West Pottsgrove Township, Brian was with the Montgomery County Sheriff's Department for several years as a deputy sheriff. And Brian has attended, he's a graduate of the former Pius High School in Pottstown. He attended Montgomery County Community College as well as Mansfield University. Brian is married to a wonderful woman who is also a deputy director of the Department of Public Safety down in Norristown. And they have a 12-year-old son together. And we're very happy to have Brian and his experience joining our team. We also hired a woman by the name of Carissa Rivera. Carissa is originally from Las Vegas, Nevada. She moved here in her teenage years. She graduated from William Tennant High School. She attended the Bucks County Community College and is also now currently working on her bachelor's degree. Carissa was a deputy sheriff with the Montgomery County Sheriff's Department and worked also in the courthouse prior to joining the sheriff's office. And we're super excited to have Carissa joining our team. She is somebody who's very devoted to community service and public relations, and we really intend to use her to increase those resources for our community. Both of the applicants went through a very extensive process of vetting. As I've mentioned in previous meetings, we received 75 applicants who applied for these two positions. And Brian and Carissa, without a doubt, were the two most well-sought candidates in terms of these positions for us. And we think that they're just going to make wonderful additions to our police department. Brian started on Monday with us and Carissa started today. So we're looking forward to getting them trained and out on the streets, and the public can expect to be seeing them very shortly. And that is the conclusion of my report.
Thank you. Any questions for Chief Maxey?
I just have one question. I know that we've been short two officers for quite a while, and that's put some limitations on your hours and your service. Could you just talk for a minute about what changes people should expect to see?
Absolutely, Marla. With the two new officers that will be coming on, we will be picking up our second shift. So in essence, we will be providing coverage on most days from 7 o'clock in the morning till about 11 o'clock at nighttime. And we will also be picking up some additional hours when needed for weekends, when we have special events or things going on that, quite frankly, really demand that we were present and have representation. The other thing that will be nice is that with the increased coverage, you will start to see increased activity out on the streets. Ultimately, we have a laundry list of people over the last year that have contacted us and have, you know, various complaints about traffic and speeding complaints. We'll be able to start addressing these. And a lot of this also does coincide with vaccinations and the COVID situation starting to taper down. So there's going to be a lot of more face-to-face contact. But ultimately, the benefit for the community is that we're going to be getting homegrown coverage from about 7 o'clock in the morning until about 11 o'clock at night.
Thank you. And just in time for the warmer weather.
Exactly. And you know, I've been driving around the township recently, you're starting to see the kids out on their bicycles, a lot of people running around in the neighborhoods, which we love to see. But ultimately, that definitely denotes that we need to have the coverage and the presence to provide safety and security for the community.
Chief, this is Chuck Geiser, just for our audience, if you could just in a few words, just give us an overview of, you know, the process, how we vetted them, you know, just so the public knows, you know, what the procedures were.
Sure. Absolutely, Chuck. We started by running a advertisement. We used the Pennsylvania Chiefs of Police Association to get that message out. And I got to tell you, we had really the best response that I've ever had in the 13 years that I've been here as chief. We had 75 applicants, and I don't want to sell any of the other applicants short. I mean, really well-qualified applicants applied. We were very blessed to have such a response. The first process began with basically a review of the resumes, and we selected people that ultimately felt were at the top tier of qualifications based on education, background, experience, and what we felt that they individually could bring to the job. Oral interviews were conducted with Corporal Dave Milligan and Steve Rinker, and they went through about 26 applicants, really trying to taper it down to five or six people that we could bring in for more involved interviewing. Out of those five or six people we brought in, they were interviewed by myself and the township manager, Mark Hudson. We got a little bit more in depth and away from the generic questions and kind of found out a little bit more about their personalities and what specifically we felt from an attitude standpoint and from a community engagement standpoint they could bring to Lower Frederick Township. Once we had really arrived at the two candidates that we felt were the best suited, which was Brian and Carissa, we proceeded into the background phase. This is the most cumbersome portion of the process because literally you're starting from the period of time right now today all the way back to almost birth. We look over every aspect. We made numerous contacts. We were really left no stone unturned. School records, transcripts, previous teachers, previous neighbors, all of these things, these people are contacted and that information is reviewed. Then the candidates are sent to polygraph testing. That was conducted by a licensed polygrapher. And ultimately, it was just verification of the information that we found, as well as areas that the polygrapher will dive into. Both Brian and Carissa were immaculate in their backgrounds, and there was absolutely zero concern. Once we had gotten to that point, we invited the board members to have one-on-one and meet with Carissa and with Brian, which we did. And I think that that was really the most engaging portion of the interview process, or should I say the vetting process. And it really gave an opportunity for the board members to ask specific questions of the candidates. And this was something that we had not done before, but I really felt that it was important to do in terms of just engaging in the transparency of employees that are hired and ultimate management here in the township. With the approval of the Board of Supervisors, after that interview, conditional offers of employment were drafted and given to both Brian and Carissa, which they accepted. And then they were sent for full battery psychological testing by a licensed psychiatrist in Pennsylvania, as well as an oral interview that was conducted by the psychiatrist, as well as physical and drug testing, which was done. And once again, Brian and Carissa had no problems. They flew through the entire process, we're very happy to say we brought them on this week, and we're really looking forward to them both having very rewarding careers here.
Great. Thank you, Chief. I just thought it was good for people to know the extent. We really appreciate the work your team and Mark and everybody involved has put into it. And, you know, we know you took this task very seriously, and we're excited to work, to have the two new officers out there.
Well, one thing that I just would like to say, Chuck, to the public is that I do take this very seriously as the chief. I know that the other two officers and especially Mark Hudson, the manager, I mean, these are people that we are empowering to go out into the community. And we really want to make sure that we have people that have the right mindset, the right disposition, the right backgrounds, and really bring an enrichment to our community. And I think that we really, I'll pat myself on the back. I think we did hit this mark 100% with Brian and Carissa. And I think that the public is going to be very pleased when they have some interactions with both of them. They're both wonderful human beings.
Great. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Chief Maxey before we have I see we have a hand raised. Okay. I think Brian has his hand raised. Mark.
Yep. Yeah. Brian, you're ready.
Thank you. Good evening. Brian Hill, 11 Ziegleraville Road. Chief Maxey, we thank you for your service, and we thank you for your dedication to commitment of bringing the new officers on. My comment this evening does not surround that. I did want to bring to your attention, over the last two Saturday evenings, we've had a vehicle that has, I'm not sure where it's coming from, but coming into our community, into a household adjacent to the old Ryder service station. This past Saturday evening, the state police were beckoned and summoned to that residence due to a vehicle that has a sound system that I think you can hear from here to Philadelphia. The bass sound was so loud as it passed my house, it actually vibrated my windows. And then they proceeded, and that was around 5 o'clock. That continued on until probably about 9:30, 10 o'clock. When the residents across the street summons the state troopers in. And again, this happened not one weekend, but a second Saturday in a row. And I'm concerned that this is going to continue as the weather gets warmer and this vehicle continues to return to this residence. So I'd ask if you could follow up with the state troopers and find out a little more information so that we can not have to deal with that in the coming weekends.
Absolutely, Brian. That's actually not a difficult task to do at all. We'll get in touch with the barracks tomorrow. We'll find out who they're visiting. And I think that probably our best bet is to maybe reach out to those folks and ask them to be mindful of their neighbors.
Thank you, Brian. Mark, is there any other public comment for Chief Maxey?
I do not see anything, Chuck.
Great. Thank you, Chief.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. That brings us to Public Works. I guess you'll be doing that report, Mark?
Yep. The Public Works Department completed 4 sewer inspections. We put the snow plows away for this year, so we're hoping that was a good move. We started the mowing for the year. Debris was moved from under the Ziegleraville Road Bridge at the plant and at the lift station. The wet wells were cleaned out and hosed down. We completed coal patching around the township, and they started the spring cleanups in the parks.
Any questions for our manager on the Public Works report? Hearing none, thank you, Mark. That brings us to the manager's report, which again is you.
Yes, we talked at our meeting last week, the PSATs, who does our police pension, has given us a disclosure form, which is required of them through the Act 44. So we need to just pass a resolution that says that the board saw this and that we will post this on the website for anyone that would be interested in looking at it. So PSATs runs our police pension, and it also says the different companies that they work with, Summit Financial and Nationwide Trust. So it gives you a little bit of information about the pension program and who is running it for us. And as I said, this was required through Act 44.
Are there any questions for our manager on the Act 44 disclosure form? So again, Mark, this will be posted on our website at some point.
Correct. And it'll be put into the police pension folder.
So we need to adopt resolution 2021-R-16, which is basically approving the 2020 Pennsylvania Municipalities Pension Trust Act 44 disclosure form, just described by our manager and discussed at last week's workshop meeting. We have a motion.
I'll so move.
Marla Hexter makes the motion. Chuck Geiser will second. Is there any further discussion? All in favor of approving resolution 2021-R-16 as described, say aye.
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 Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Mark. Is that the end of your report?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Brings us to our solicitor, Peter Nelson.
The first item we have under my report is the fee in lieu of ordinance. This was discussed last week at the work session. Based on the comments raised by the board at the work session, I revised the ordinance and forwarded it on to the board. And I believe the revised ordinance is now in your packet. I am looking for authorization to forward this ordinance on to the county and township planning commissions and to have it advertised for the board's adoption at the earliest possible date, either in June or July.
Any questions for our solicitor on the ordinance, fee in lieu of ordinance?
The only question I have, and it's not really about the ordinance, is there any amount of time that we should let elapse or not let elapse before adopting the fee? That is, how close together should those two things be?
I would recommend that the fee be adopted the same night that the ordinance is adopted.
Okay, thank you.
And we have, you know, when it's sent to the planning commission, we must give each planning commission 30 days to review the ordinance. And then we can, the board can then consider adoption at after those 30 days have run.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to state that the yellow highlights in the ordinance signify the changes that were made between the ordinance that was provided to the board last week and the existing ordinance before the board today.
Peter, the only comment I'd like to make is, and certainly the Planning Commission can take this up when they look at it, is we did receive one comment via email after last week's meeting, suggesting that we put some guardrails around the selection process for lands trust organizations. And the reference, the suggestion is that we make sure that any lands trust organization who will be holding easements would be an accredited, keyword accredited, entity that is accredited by the Lands Trust Alliance, I believe it is, in Washington, D.C. And I thought that was a very reasonable thing to do. Natural lands is on the list, as well as other lands trusts that we've dealt with. This is an approximately 40-year-old organization, nationally recognized, and I think, to me, made a lot of sense. So,
I did not add that because it was a suggestion made, you know, by a member of the public, and I wasn't authorized by the board to do that. Also, you know, my concern, you know, as we've seen, you know, in some of the changes we're making in this ordinance by deleting a list of trust, you know, just because this organization has been around for 40 years, you never know. It, for whatever reason, it could disappear next week, next year. It could undergo a name change. I usually don't like putting those sorts of names in ordinances because it just shows how old an ordinance is when you'll be reading an ordinance and they'll name something that you realize hasn't been in existence for 20 years and you're like, oh really, they haven't updated it for that long. You know, at the end of the day, you know, the board of supervisors is going to have say over whether or not an organization is acceptable or not. If the board of supervisors wants to institute a policy that they must, you know, be accredited by this organization or any similar organization, you know, they certainly can do that. You know, but, you know, I agree. It's probably a good choice. I have, you know, heard of that organization. I dealt with them. I looked at their website at times for various things. But I guess my general feeling is, I generally try not to box the board of supervisors in when I write ordinances. I usually try to have faith that the members of the board are going to do what's best for the township and try not to tie their hands too much. That being said, if the board would like that to be added to this ordinance, we certainly could add it. We should add it now. If we wait to see what the planning commissions say and the planning commissions agree with that and we decide to add it, we then have to, after we make that change, we would have to then send it back to the planning commissions and give them another 30 days to review it.
Peter, is there another alternative? I'm just thinking about what we did for the plant list where we said we referred it to another list. So the ordinance itself doesn't have to be updated, just some other separate item has to be updated.
Like an exhibit.
Yeah, exactly. Can we do something like that, which will allow the ordinance to remain up to date without having to actually update it on a regular basis? We can just have this list.
You can do that. My only caution to that, Marla, is if we do too much of that and then we, you know, what happens when we lose the official list it makes sense for certain things to do that. But let me step back here. What type of list do you want to provide? Just a list of organizations that are acceptable to the board?
I think, Marla, I just want to make a statement associated with what you, so Peter, I guess what I think what the intent is to ensure that any of the organizations that might be chosen to work with the township meet the type of requirements that are associated with this accreditation type group. So I don't know how we phrase that, but the idea is to make sure that we don't wind up by accident or, you know, somehow or another choosing a conservancy type organization that isn't really founded appropriately, doesn't have the right back. So how can we do what we're trying to How can we make an how can we accomplish what the intent here is to ensure that we're working with credible, reliable organizations. Am I saying that right, Chuck? That's sort of what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I mean, let me go back. Let me see what Marla wants, and then Dan, I'll come back to your question.
Okay.
Okay. So Marla, are you looking to put together a list of conservancies and similar organizations that are acceptable to the township? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I mean, that's an option. I think what Dan and I are both getting at is the same thing, is how to be specific enough without being too specific, and how to ensure it doesn't go out of date. And I don't know what that would be.
I guess, we certainly could do a list. We certainly could. I mean, the simplest way is to put in the ordinance is that, we could say something to the effect that, all these such ordinances must be accredited by by an appropriate organization. That's the kind of the loosest way to do it. We could put in language, as was suggested by Phil Smith, that is accredited by, that one particular organization. I mean, if you want to do a list, doing a list is fine. But like I said, hopefully a board, a future boards are going to do their due diligence to make sure that, whatever organization is offered up by a developer, that the board checks it out and makes sure, checks it out by seeing if it is accredited. Is it some fly by night organization, or is it something that's been doing this for years? If a future board is not going to do their homework, or they're going to be, slippery about it, putting a list together isn't going to stop them from doing that, unfortunately.
I see your point. So maybe yeah. The solution is something like, as Dan suggested, is make it a little more generic and not naming a specific accreditation organization, but just getting at that level of, like you said, credibility, transparency, and in a way that, like you said, provides some guidance to any future boards.
Yes. I mean, I could put language in there saying that, such a conservancy must be appropriately accredited by a nationally recognized organization in the business of, accrediting these. I could tweak it to make it better, but, something to that effect.
I have a recommendation from Crystal that would say just an accredited land conservation organization.
You could do that also, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that would... I see what you're saying, Peter. There are no guarantees that any future board will...
And that's kind of why I'm always like, well, I'm just going to have to put my trust in the future board, because if they really are nefarious, they're going to undo whatever we do. certainly I've seen language in other ordinances where they say, like Crystal has suggested, that it must be an accredited, organization. And we certainly can add language to that effect here.
That works for me. Thank you, Crystal.
Yeah. Mark, could you do me a favor? Is there more to this than what we're showing here on the screen? Because it cuts it off. Nobody can really see the rest of the language. And specifically all the places that it's been changed, because we've updated different sections.
Unfortunately, I think that just shows that's a clean version. It's not a redline version.
Mark, you have the redline version in the Dropbox.
Yeah, I was actually hoping that we could have seen the redline version so everybody gets a good idea about what it said before and where we're at with it now.
Mark has it in the Dropbox.
Yeah, give me one second.
Well,
I mean, so the group, just so we can give Peter, yeah, so we can give Peter direction before we get into this. Is the group okay with the suggestion that was made by Crystal?
Yeah, absolutely. That makes the most sense.
Yeah, that was sort of where I was trying to get to, but I didn't get there all the way. So, yep.
Okay. So we will, if we haven't voted yet, but if we do pass this to the Planning Commission, it will have some facts,
yes,
of that language in there.
Yes.
Peter, is there any problem with doing it the way we did the telecommunications, where we sent the ordinance to the county and to the Planning Commission? Once we got that back from them, then we sent it out for advertisement.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we could do them in parallel, or we can wait until we get the Planning Commission's review. And if the board is happy with those reviews, we can then advertise. It all depends on how quickly the board wishes to adopt it.
But if they come back with changes, do we have to re-advertise?
Well, they come back with changes that we then make to the ordinance. We actually have to resend to the Planning Commissions.
Yep.
And then and if it was already advertised, yes, we would have to re-advertise. You know, normally what I would do is, how it worked, we might be able to actually pull the advertisements back before we spend money on them. We would probably have to re-advertise also, because, we would have to wait another 30 days for the Planning Commission to review the revised version. And then obviously that would blow past, whatever date we were advertising to have the board consider it.
Do you see there being a holdup with anybody reviewing this at this point? I mean, it looks pretty straightforward.
Well, it's really up to the board. Generally speaking, when the planning, the county and township planning commissions come back, my general advice to my townships is, okay, those are great suggestions. We're gonna, keep them in the back of our mind, and we'll adopt them the next time we enact a new zoning ordinance, instead of, changing it and then sending it back out. Unless there's really a critical error that a planning commission has discovered, my general recommendation is enact it, and then we'll tweak it the next time we need to do a new zoning amendment. Because otherwise, you get into this cycle where you're continuing to amend it, and you keep sending it to the planning commission, and next thing you know, it's 6 months down the road, and you still haven't enacted it.
Okay.
But shouldn't we let them see it once before we finalize it? I mean, I don't have a problem with calculating the 30 days and planning to advertise it the week after that 30 days is up. I mean, that's only going to add an extra week or two to the time. It just, they may find something that'll make it better that would be worthwhile. I agree we shouldn't go back and forth four or five times, but we should at least let them see it.
Oh, yeah, right? I that's perfectly fine, Marlo. I have no problem doing that.
I feel strongly that we should give it to the Planning Commission and let them have their say in it. We value their opinion, and then we'll act on what we get back.
All right. So if that being said, I think what I'm just looking for now is authorization to send it to the Planning Commissions.
I will so move with that one addition suggested by Crystal.
I'll second with the same caveat that Marla mentioned.
So Marla Hexter makes the motion to send the ordinance on to the Planning Commission. Dan Orff seconds. Is there any further discussion?
Just to clarify, it's going to our Planning Commission and the county?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought.
Planning commissions. So is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of forwarding this fee in lieu of ordinance on to the Lower Frederick Township Planning Commission, the Montgomery County Planning Commission for their reviews and comments. Say aye.
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 Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
I will get that off to them this week.
Thank you, Peter.
You're quite welcome. The second item under the solicitor report is a second ordinance, and this is an ordinance to enact a residential disclosure ordinance. What this would do is this would create a new chapter within the township code and create a requirement that any owner or developer who is selling a lot to someone who is going to, either has a brand new house built on that lot, or that person is going to build a brand new house on that lot, would have to undertake and go through a checklist disclosing information about the lot and about the development the lot is in to that prospective buyer to make sure the buyer fully understands everything about that lot, about the development, about public improvements around the lot, about any obligations this person would have as the lot's owner towards certain improvements or common elements, either on the lot or within the development. So it's not a complete panacea. It doesn't solve all the problems. We can't guarantee that the developers divulge all the information, but I have found in other townships that it definitely improves the communications between developers and prospective purchasers, and helps make sure that these purchasers understand exactly what they're getting into. Once again, this ordinance was reviewed at the work session last week. The board did have some comments regarding the language of it. I revised it based on those comments, and that is the ordinance that you see in front of you.
Any questions for Peter?
Well, first off, I don't see the I don't say it. And secondly, I had a chance to look at it again, and I was wondering, sorry, Peter, if we could potentially expound upon item number 14 or add another item to the checklist. Because I noted that all the EAF factors associated with the development from steep slopes, floodplains, and wetlands, they're all mentioned and made note of. But I was wondering if we could add something about the soil conditions, the geology, depth of bedrock, and the water table to be included as well.
That's certainly something we can specifically list.
Yeah. Everything else is there. It's just that one particular thing. It's an EAF factor.
I guess the rub, as I understand it, Noel, is that these things are not typically done on a per lot basis. For a normal,
I'm not asking for it to be done on a per lot basis. I'm under the impression that that there is a page in the development plans that go along with all the other pages that actually show that information.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
To show it as a whole, just like everything else. Yeah, we had discussed that it's not an at like per lot situation. Understood.
Peter, is that something that could be done?
I could revise the ordinance to add that language. I just want it, once we're done with this discussion, if the board is in favor of it, I just would like someone to tell me exactly what they're looking for. That's all, to make sure I cover it all. As long as it's something that's normally shown, and I believe it is normally shown on development plans, we certainly can mention in this disclosure ordinance. Carol,
were you going to add something? Maybe you have a suggestion about how that could be meted out.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a little bit of information to offer. So the items that are in this checklist, a very educated person that's familiar with the development and familiar with how to read plans can deduce all this from the plans and from the studies that have already been done. It gets a little more challenging when we talk about things like depth to water table and depth to bedrock, because when that's shown on the plan, as you correctly pointed out, that's sort of a regional thing. It's not necessarily specific to that lot. That generally comes when you see that in tables on a plan that's coming from the Webb Soil Survey, and that's done at a scale of 1 inch equals 1,000 feet, which most of our plans that we look at are 1 inch equals 100 feet or 1 inch equals 40 feet. So they're on a really broad scale. The only way that we really know the depth to water table or seasonal high water table or bedrock is when the soil scientist or geologist goes out and digs holes to find that. So I'm not sure if that would bring the same level of accuracy and information that you're hoping to be able to transmit to these property owners. I'm a little concerned it may even be a little misleading, as if that information was fixed and real, when in reality it's a range based on an extraordinarily large area.
So what, I hope that's what information, helpful. Okay, so then what information could be gleaned from the plans that could be put into a check item on here to at least represent it as an EAF factor?
I suppose general mapping indicates high water tables in this area may be. And the couple of ranges that are in our ordinance would probably be applicable if we wanted to try and address that. Is that the primary concern, Noelle? Is that the thing that was most on your mind, the depth to water table?
I just thought that it would seem appropriate that if we're going to point out, you know, wetlands, floodplains, and steep slopes.
And the other part of the challenge is the depth to water table isn't actually computed in the EAFs unless it's on lot sewer proposed for that lot or that development. So I guess that's the other hiccup. If it's a lot that does have public sewer, that EAF may not have been calculated and delineated, as I think of it.
But what is the impact upon the potential buyer? I mean, how does this help them, you know, in deciding whether or not they want to purchase the property? You know, if it has a high water table, you know, you're more likely to get flooding in your basement. You're more likely to have a, you know, I'll
take a stab at that, Peter. I mean, in some of the plans that I've seen over time, they've occasionally indicated a depth to high water table of 0 to 4 inches, which, if I was a potential home buyer and I looked at I had the map of the area that was going to be developed, and I saw that the particular lot that I was interested in happened to be in the area of the development that had a 0 to 4 inch depth to high water table, I'd be a little concerned about choosing that particular lot. Because although it's not guaranteed, because I know they're going to push dirt around and make adjustments that way, I think I'd be more likely to be leveraging the use of a sump pump as opposed to another area in the same development parcel where, say, the average depth to high water table was, say, 16 to 24 inches, which I've seen on these charts, too. So that's one thing that I can think of off the top of my head related to the things that Noel is referring to. Does that help? And Noel, yeah. Does that help? Is that what you're going
yes,
for?
Actually, yeah, that does. That's yeah, that does help.
Would it help then to add something to the checklist that says I've reviewed the common soil properties listed on the plan? Because all the plans, anything that has erosion control would have a chart of the soils and common soil properties.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps that would be a way to address the concern to bring to the somebody's attention what Dan said, that hey, the you know, on this lot there's a shallow water table.
That sounds reasonable.
That's in the ENS, Carol?
Yes, that exactly, Mark. That would be on every ENS plan is a table of the soil properties.
Yeah, and that's where I saw that, Mark. That's where the numbers I was referring to. I've seen them on most of the developer plans that come to us. They always have that table on there. Yeah.
Yeah, we could have the developer give that page of the plan set to the homeowner as part of this. That's what I was thinking, Noel, when we talked.
Yeah. The way this works is, I mean, the way ideally it's supposed to work is they're supposed to be, you know, the developer is supposed to have a plan set and that they go through the plan set with the prospective purchaser and point out all these things on the plans. And so you're going to need someone at the developer, you know, who's going to understand this stuff, you know? So the question is this something that, you know, the person in, you know, the sales trailer for development or the model home is going to be able to, you know, sit down and go through the plan set and point out, okay, here, you know, this lot has a high water table. I don't know, you know, telling, you know, having someone tell a prospective home buyer, okay, you know, your depth to water table is, you know, 0 to 4 inches. There's many home buyers who have no idea what that means. And the developer may not go through the explanation of saying, you know, what that means. If we want to add something like that, I think it needs to be language that, you know, if you tell someone there's a high water table here, that might mean more to the uninformed, uneducated home buyer than telling them the actual, you know, depth to the water table. That might just go over their heads.
So Peter, I agree with what you're saying, that providing soil types is not going to be something that everyone reads or understands. So, Noel, are you trying to kind of let the prospective home buyers know that if they're in this development that has these soil types or water tables, it's common for these to require sump pumps to avoid flooding? And then from the township perspective, to let them know at this time, if they do get a sump pump, it's not... they should not be discharged.
Yeah, well, maybe, yeah, that's kind of part of it. We're going to progress there, but yeah, that's kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Without saying they're requiring one, just letting them know that it's not uncommon that they may need one and they should never discharge it into our sewer system.
Yeah.
So maybe better than getting into the depth of the water table or, you know, make it a specific requirement for the developer to state whether or not a sump pump is going to be required in the basement of this particular proposed home. They're going to know that.
And then we could have in there the, you know, just a little paragraph in the checklist that says, you know, sump pumps aren't to be discharged to stormwater, you know, or directly to the street.
Well, it has a slight educational component to it. Yeah.
Although that's really not going to be up to the homeowner. I mean, whoever builds the house is going to have to build the discharge pipe for the sump pump in accordance with our ordinances.
Yeah, I mean, that will be inspected. I mean, certainly if there's a sump pump required, you know, making sure that the person who's buying it maybe just gets a copy of our sump pump ordinance that we have. But I mean, it does, just to loop back on what we talked about earlier, I mean, what we have in there now under C says a copy of the plans, narrative text, and any other applicable documents shall be given to the potential home buyer in conjunction with the disclosure statement. So my understanding of a copy of the plans means the plans. Or do we want to delineate which plan sheets? But how do we interpret that? To me, that means the plans, like how many ever sheets there are.
Yeah, but I think what Noel and Dan are getting at is to highlight something specific related to this specific issue. If someone shows me a plan, okay, but I'm not going to know how to interpret it. I think it, you know, talking specifically about sump pumps or whatever you want to talk specifically about is more important. And again, it will lead to a different discussion than saying, here's the plan.
I'm not disagreeing. I don't think we're in a position to push this forward tonight because it seems like there's too many things that we still need to figure out. That's kind of where I'm at. Unless there's one or two things you want to just have Peter do and move on, but.
Chuck, in regards to your question here, the checklist actually does not mesh with that section C.
Yeah.
because yeah, the check section C, you're completely correct, says a copy of the plans shall be given to the home buyer. And I think that's probably overkill. But if you look at the end of the checklist, it says, we, the undersigned, acknowledge that we have received a full-size copy of the cover sheet detailing right. the scope of the subdivision and land development plan, of which the subject party is part, subject property is a part, as well as a separate lot plan. So that's definitely different. I think that's probably more what we would want in the ordinance itself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we need one. It, you know, produce a full set of construction plans. You know, that might be 40 or 50 pages,
right?
And it costs a heck of a lot of money.
What if you just said, as opposed to saying shall be given, just say shall be made available to, and that means that they're there for inspection if they choose to.
Yeah, I think that would be more appropriate because, like I said, the way I view this of being done is, you know, the developer, builder, you know, sales agent go through the plans and point out all these items to the buyer, but doesn't have to give the plans to the buyer. That doesn't make sense.
The individual lot grading plan is it's one page. A lot of times it's only 8.5 by 11. And I think that would be extremely valuable to your potential homeowner because especially with the larger developments, it lists the zoning requirements, the coverage areas, it shows the building setback lines, shows any easements. So that those individual lot grading plans, I think, are a super thing to give to the incoming property owner. And I would keep that on your checklist, Peter. I thought that was a great idea.
Okay. Yeah, I like the language of the checklist. I just need to tweak the language of the actual ordinance to match that.
What was that called again, Carol?
Sometimes it's called the plot plan or the grading plan or the building permit plan, but it's a plan that shows the dimensions of the lot, the setbacks, any easements. It shows the footprint of the proposed house. The grading of the lot. So it's jam packed with information that's going to be really helpful to the homeowner going forward.
Yeah. Other than like a big set of plans.
Right.
That's going to get lost. It's going to go right over their head.
Why don't we get a sample of that out to the board and then we can come back to this at the work session and.
Yeah. I would like that.
Everything up. We'll get a sample of the grading plan that Carol's talking about. Out to everyone, and then we'll work to, you know, address any of these other comments. We're ready to go at the next meeting.
Yeah, I like having some language about sump pumps because they're often problematic, and
Yeah. All right. We can come up with that.
They should know whether or not their home's going to be built with a sump pump. Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I like both suggestions, Carol's and Marla's and Chuck's. They should know about sump pumps, and they should have that particular page of the plan that outlines all that information. Because that's pretty, that's fairly digestible, if I recall, Carol.
Yeah, I mean, Planning Commission doesn't typically see that because it gets done after the subdivision has gone through the approval. It gets done as they hive off the lots and develop them.
Mm-hmm. So, correct.
Yeah.
I do have a comment from Crystal, if it's okay, that record plan, not the cover sheet. The cover sheets don't show much. The record plan shows the full development.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment.
So you're going to update that?
Yep.
Yeah, we'll update that and bring it back.
Marla, were you going to add something else? You'd started to say something.
It's not related to this. Okay. I remember Peter saying that we had to agree on a amount for the fee in lieu the same day. I don't know if that's today or if that's the day we send it out to advertising. I just wanted to make sure we weren't missing something.
Yeah, we kind of skipped over that. I did send out, before we get pulled, let's wrap up this and then I will, in part of my solicitor report, we'll return to the fee in lieu of and we'll discuss the actual fees.
Cool.
Thanks for catching that, Marl.
So do we need to give Peter any more direction at this point? Is there something missing?
I'm good unless there's any other suggestions for language changes, adjustments.
I don't have any. Okay. Thank you, Peter.
And welcome. So the new third bullet on the solicitor report is a discussion of actual fees in lieu of. I did provide a handout or, a two-page document giving examples of various townships fees from Bucks, Montgomery, and Delaware counties. And then at the end of that, as requested last week, I did make a recommendation. My recommendation is based on the size of Lower Frederick. I think the relative land prices here. I recommend that for a minor subdivision, which is basically a lot line change or a two lot subdivision, that would be $500 per new dwelling unit. So like a lot line change where there's no new dwelling unit, they wouldn't pay anything. And then all other subdivision and land developments for residential purposes, it would be $1,000 for new dwelling units. Existing dwelling units wouldn't have to pay. For non-residential, it would be 500 square feet, or sorry, $500 for 1,000 square feet of floor area. So that's, so if you have a three-story building, all three stories would count towards that. When you're doing a fee in lieu of just facilities, for example, with the Prestige development where they are providing us with the open space that is required, what they're not providing us with is with the actual rec field, the fee would be 100% of the estimated cost of the facilities not being built. That's my recommendation. You should take it as a starting point of this discussion, not as an end point. And it's kind of based on looking at all these other fees from these other townships, as well as Mark sent around the list of fees of all the neighboring townships, such as Upper Frederick, Limerick, Collegeville, and New Hanover. And I think my recommendations are somewhat in line with those also.
Thank you, Peter. I think all of those suggestions sound reasonable. I just had one other minor question. Do you build anything in for cost of living or inflation, or how do you, over time, what happens to these?
Well, the way the ordinance is written is it just goes back to your list suggestion for conservation groups. But the ordinance is written so that the fee is not listed in the ordinance, rather it's listed in our fee schedule
right.
that the board traditionally revises every year. So if the board, after a few years thinks we need to up these fees, or, let's say, for better or for worse, Lower Frederick becomes a hot new community and your land prices shoot up and you think, okay, hey, wait a second, we want higher fees here. You just need to change the fee schedule without having to revise the ordinance. There are other ways of doing it. You could do a COLA. You could, some places they do base it on property values, and they just revalue the properties every few years. But once again, the way I've set it up, it's very simple and straightforward, and it's easy for the board to increase these fees or decrease them on an annual basis.
Thank you.
I've a question for on something you mentioned, Peter, when you talked about the last scenario where we would basically be, we're having the developer not install an improvement. And you mentioned something about the cost of that improvement. You remember what you?
Yeah. It's a cost estimate. Yes.
So we would have to then build in a mechanism as to how that estimate is arrived at.
Well, it actually follows, and Carol, you can step in here if I say anything out of turn. But, if we're requiring these facilities, we require them to do a cost estimate because part of the financial guarantee is the cost of building these facilities. Mm-hmm. So the developer, the developer is going to be already estimating the cost of these facilities. And that estimate is then reviewed by the township engineer to see whether or not they agree or disagree with it. And then that's the amount that, would be arrived of as a fee in lieu of. I have other townships that actually do fees in lieu of for waived road improvements. And it's just the exact same procedure. All the improvements that are waived, the developer needs to provide an estimate of what they're worth. And then the township engineer approves that estimate. And then the fee in lieu of is then based off of the cost of the waived improvements. I have one township that they have a resolution that lays that all out, and the developer is required to pay 50% of the waived road improvements.
Okay, so what you're saying is the process is already in place. We use it to calculate escrow.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So the developers, it's not going to be something new and unusual for the developers to do. You agree with that, Carol?
Yes, I do, Peter. Thank you.
No, thank you for agreeing with me.
So that facility's cost, will they then also pay per new dwelling, or is it one or the other?
Well, the new dwelling is like if let's say we have a situation where they're offering us open space and it's like just a completely junk piece of ground. A better example is, they're saying, look, we can't meet our open space requirements. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be able to meet our open space requirements. And we say, that's fine. But you're going to pay a fee in lieu of, which is $1,000 per dwelling unit. That's the way it would work that way.
It is one or the other.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure that it wasn't could be a very low facility and they just choose that one. But okay.
So yeah, and you know, in that situation, if they're not providing the open space or they're not providing the rec area and they're not providing rec facilities, you could get both. Because you could get the $1,000 per dwelling unit for not providing the necessary open space, plus, you know, you'd get the cost estimate for the tot lot that they're failing to put in.
Sure. Okay.
Any other questions for Peter? I'm going to make a lighthearted comment. I was tickled by Buckingham Township, which has a very exact amount of $2,766.50. For fee in lieu of.
Yes.
So it seems that we would want to have continue this discussion and have hopefully things solidified so that at the same meeting that we approve the fee in lieu of ordinance, we can also approve the schedule.
Yes. Okay. And we certainly could have, you know, further discussions on it. We can tweak the numbers. We also can tweak how we are coming up with the numbers or how they're applied. But it's unlike the ordinance, we can continue tweaking it up until the point we adopt them.
Yeah, I think Peter, you did a good job, and we could discuss this till we're blue in the face. But at the end of the day, I think the numbers you came up with make sense. They're in line with other municipalities, our size, and they're nice round numbers. So,
And the other thing is they're numbers in line with a lot of municipalities, so developers are not going to be shocked by them. Mm-hmm. And you still control the question of whether, it's not the developers don't have the ability to pick or choose one or the other. They can ask to do the fee in lieu of, and then it's up to you to decide whether or not it's what's better for the township, demanding the open space rec, land rec facilities, or getting the fees.
Okay. So from a process standpoint, the fee in lieu of ordinance, assuming things move through planning commission, we could be voting on that at our July meeting, or perhaps if we wanted to at our workshop meeting at the end of June. I don't see that happening sooner than that. Basically, requirements.
Yeah, probably I don't think
July.
Probably the July meeting.
In May, it would be pushed to the July workshop because our first meeting in June is June 1st, if I'm correct. So 30 days from now would be after our next meeting.
Yeah, you're right. June 1st probably, is our first meeting.
Yeah, should be able to get it in July.
So do we want to plan on then just having this, firming this discussion up a little bit at our next workshop meeting? Does that make sense to the group? Or
let's see where the planning, if we get it back from the planning commissions by then. Once we get it back from them, then we can have the discussion again.
Anybody feel differently?
No, that works.
Yeah, sounds like a plan.
Good. All right. Now I can say thank you, Peter, right?
Yes. Yeah,
thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you all. And that's the end of my report.
Thank you. Peter, we just want to mention here that Gentera's requested the Gentera conditional use hearing that is scheduled for May 10th, which is next Monday. The applicant has asked for another continuance. They're working on the AT&T easement and getting very close, but they have some final details to shore up with AT&T for that easement. So looking to June, we will hold the meeting. We will open the meeting on the 10th next Monday. We will have a date ready by then and let everyone know when that conditional use will be continued to.
Yeah. I mean, right now it looks like it will be continued to June 3rd, but we got to confirm that with the developer.
So is this continuance specifically about the AT&T easement that they're working with them about that?
The continuance is they want to nail down what they have to do with the easement because it impacts their plans. So they don't want to go through the whole conditional use process and then right. AT&T blows up their plan. And then all of a sudden we're telling them, well, we got to do another hearing because your plan's completely changed.
Now that's understandable. Okay.
Yeah. So I think they want to get the AT&T easement nailed down so they can solidify their plans. So they, you know, don't have to come back in front of us another time. And certainly I suspect you guys would appreciate that also.
For sure.
Yeah. And then Chuck, before we go on to boards and commissions, I did see and kind of verified here, we have Eileen Johnson with us from the library that wanted to say a few words. So if we could fit her in, if that's okay with you.
That's fine. Eileen, thank you for coming in. I'm sorry we made you wait so long.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to give you guys a brief update about the library. I don't know if you're aware that the end of March, we had retirement. Kathy Arnold-Jurger, the executive director, retired. We have a brand new executive director, Karen D'Angelo. We look forward to working with Karen. She's very knowledgeable with the county. She's worked in Norristown in a county state position. It's kind of hard to describe, but it was a position that worked with all the libraries in the county and was liaison to the state and had a lot of fingers in all kinds of places. But now she's our executive director and we look forward to working with her. And just want to make sure everybody's aware that the library is open for service. We're open 28 hours a week. We are continuing to do the curbside service because we do have people who just don't feel comfortable coming into our building. But they are allowed to come in and browse and pick up their own things. And we are open for full service. Any questions? We really appreciate support for Lower Frederick. So,
Eileen, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Marla.
I just wanted one quick question. Are you going to do any programs for the kids this summer? And if so, how will that work?
Yeah, most of our programming at this time will be online, although Governor was changing things today. So I don't know if I'll get approval to do more outside. We will try to come out to the parks. I'll be reaching out to Mark about doing story time in the park. We've done, I guess it was 2 years ago now. And then something outside the library. But most of it, unfortunately, is going to be online probably. We're having an information session at the end of the same night as your meeting on the 25th. Hopefully by that point, we'll have more information. The online recording will be online on a program called Beanstack, where the kids and the adults can read and record their reading and earn virtual tickets for raffle prizes that'll be given at the end of the summer. So we will be doing something and keeping everybody busy.
Thank you. Sorry, Noelle.
That's okay. So, I mean, can people go online and pick the books that they want? I'm not familiar with that. I always usually just go right into the library.
You can do it both ways. It's very easy to go on and use your account and click on the things you want. If it's not physically in my building, it takes a couple of days before it gets circulated around the county. We have daily delivery from Norristown that circulates the books. So you can ask for a book, and if Abington's the only one that has that book, they'll send it up to us. You can pick it up there, no problem.
Perfect. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you for your time.
Any other questions for Eileen? Great. Thank you, Eileen. Thank you for being there. We appreciate your service. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
That brings us to the boards and commissions portion of our meeting. We'll start with Planning Commission. I guess that's Crystal. Gilchrist.
Hello.
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 I'll be brief. We didn't have a meeting last month. So we'll be looking forward to the two ordinances and anything else that the board sends our way for May. I will remind everybody that May 10th. Is it 10th? 10th.
6th.
6th. I never get the dates right. May 6th is our comp plan Zoom open house. So we'd like to see everybody participate in that. Other than that, I have no other news.
Thank you, Crystal. Any questions for Crystal? Great. That brings us to comprehensive plan steering committee update. So I'll take that as our planning commission chair just mentioned. We will be having a public event this Thursday, May the 6th, starting at 6:30 p.m. Our comprehensive plan is coming together. We've got our draft chapters pretty well finalized. They are available on the township website. And there is also an approximately 15-minute informational video, which gives an overview of the plan. And you can watch that video, get an idea of what the plan is all about, some of its contents. We encourage people to watch the video. It's been on YouTube for the past week and a half or so. And then we encourage people to come to the meeting. At 6:30, we will actually show the video for those people who may not have seen it. We'll play the video over Zoom in our meeting. And then our steering committee members will be around to answer residents' questions about the plan and take their comments and feedback. And we really, really hope that we get, you know, people to come out and ask some good questions. So that Zoom meeting is going to be the same number that we use for all of our township meetings, which is on the website. It's also on various Facebook posts. So it's the same meeting, same number that you use for tonight's meeting. So we really look forward to everybody coming out on Thursday, May the 6th at 6:30 p.m. Thank you. So that brings us to Park and Recreation Board. I guess that would be Pam.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can everyone hear me this evening?
Yep.
First, we were hoping to meet at Village Center Park, but because of the weather, we did meet yet last night via Zoom due to the weather. And first item, I would like to thank everyone who came out to volunteer their time at the PWC stream cleanup and also the Village Center Park spring cleanup. We got a lot of work done, a lot of trash picked up, and the volunteer help to beautify our community is certainly appreciated. We are continuing our planning on events. We're planning a busy week, a busy year this year, and we're expecting people to start showing up since we're all doing everything outside. Our concert, as we stated previously, is at Cuddy on Thursday, August 12th at 7 o'clock. We have a rain date on August 18th. We're also planning Fall Fest this year at Foy Park on Saturday, October 16th from 1 to 3 p.m. We're going to have live music. We're going to have moon bounce. We're going to have snacks, pumpkin painting, face painting. Fire company is going to be there, as they have agreed to attend. And also thanks to Saxon Sons for they're going to do the hayride again, which is always a very popular hit with everyone. And this year we are doing additional outreach to the community. I've touched base with Chief Maxey and he's agreed to have the police participating. We've outreached out to Engage Art Studio and they have agreed to sponsor an activity for the kids, at least one or two activities, art activities for the kids. And EAC has also indicated that they will be present. So we're expecting to have a nice event with a lot of things going on. We'll have additional things this year. It's going to be fun. So we're hoping everybody's ready to get out and get some exercise and have some fun in the fall. In addition to those, we have scheduled two new events as of last night's meeting. In recognition of International Pollinator Week on June 21st to 27th, we're planning on doing a pollinator event at the Cuddy Meadow on Saturday, June 26th from 1 to 3. We have a work group working on that. We're tentatively planning on Donna Lynn is going to do a honeybee demonstration. One of us will be leading some kind of a meadow walk, intro to the meadow walk, describing the native meadow, why it's important, what the plants are, what pollinators we can expect to see in our parks, in our township, and that kind of thing. So we're still putting that together, but we want to do that level of outreach and introduce people to the Cuddy. Meadow, because that's something that a lot of people don't even know we have, and it's really a gem for our township. We're also planning our first tree planting demo and volunteer event at Village Center Park on Saturday, November 13th, with a rain date of Saturday, November 20th from 1 to 3 p.m. We have enough tree donations to pay for about 7 trees right now, and hopefully we'll get more. We've set a cutoff date for tree donations to be planted this fall at September 1st so that we can do planning and anticipate and get the tags made up and things ahead of time. Warren has agreed to start talking to nurseries and start sourcing and reserving trees so we know that we have them on hand and we can go ahead and order the tags and have the tags made up. A lot of the trees have memorial statements on them, and we want to have the tags available when we plant, if at all possible, so that the people who bought the trees can help plant their trees and put their signs on. We discussed, again, we're still working on the pollinator garden interpretive panel. We selected a panel that is customizable within a reasonable price for us, and we voted on that and agreed that I will go forward with working on finalizing and customizing the artwork and getting that panel finalized. And we have in the past occasionally posted up educational pieces regarding nature, native species, you name it. And the EAC has reached out. They would like to do joint postings with us so that we're all doing the same thing and not stepping on each other's toes. But we're both participating, and we're going to develop a mechanism for joint posting on the township website so that we can do that. And that's great. And the two of us, two organizations working together on information for the public to use to help them, along with the information that will be on the QR codes in our parks and on our signage and on our plants. That will give people information on how to, and a lot of detail there. And lastly, Mark last week identified that we do not have an ordinance for our parks. We have rules posted at several parks. We do not have an ordinance behind it to give it some meat. We have had some issues in the parks. So Mark provided us with a draft of an ordinance sample to look at and some pictures of local park signs that he was kind enough to go out and get pictures of for our consideration. We started the discussion last night, and everyone on the park board was copied today on all of that information that Mark provided so that everyone can study it and comment on it, be prepared for discussion at our next meeting. And I think that's my report. Any questions?
Questions for Pam? Pam, thank you for the report, and also thank you and the rest of the group and Mark for undertaking the all the endeavors you do, but also specifically on what's on my mind is the coming up with the rules for the park. I think that's something that would be very valuable,
right,
for us to have.
Agreed.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, that brings us to Environmental Advisory Council. That would be Ruth.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
The EAC met on Monday, April 26th. Mm-hmm. I announced that I will not be seeking reappointment to the EAC when my term's up in December. I just wanted to give plenty of notice so that a replacement can be found. The EAC discussed options and ideas for addressing Peter Nelson's concerns and advice for the sump pump below grade structure ordinance and for addressing tree protection. Based on the discussion, members are working to develop succinct communications on both issues with the intention that it'll be ready for to vote on at the May meeting. Jackie updated us, announced that the list of stormwater BMPs is complete, but that she and the inventory team are still collecting details, such as the assessment. And then she also noted that the multi-municipality effort to get a full picture of stormwater BMPs in the entire region is ongoing. The outreach working team said that it's developing a logo and a tagline for the EAC, one that the members will be able to consider in May. And we also received a link for the PWC webinar videos, which Pam mentioned. So there's additional videos to the native planting one that is there now. And we will be reviewing those videos in hopes to approve them at our May meeting. We discussed the LFT newsletter, which just came out, and how we can be a little more proactive in being prepared for what we're going to submit to that newsletter each quarter. And the outreach team is also very enthusiastic about partnering with the park board to engage and inform the public on various shared concerns like native plants and the pollinators. And so the team is very enthusiastic about that, working together. Everybody confirmed that they received the ethics policy, and Jackie and Diane shared a document titled LFT Environmental Development Plan Review Guide, which they will use as a useful checklist for considering the environmental impact of proposed development plans. And that is the end of my report.
Great, thank you, Ruth. Do you have any questions for Ruth? I know a few years ago, Ruth, on the regional planning, we did have a fairly good discussion on stormwater, and you know, looking at it in a multi-municipal, through a multi-municipal lens, recognizing that, you know, what any one township can't fix things. And, you know, there was an awful lot of interest from Schwenksville because they receive an awful lot of water from other municipalities. And, you know, I don't know whether or not there's any way in which the Regional Planning Commission could work with groups. I mean, they do have money that they can collect to help fund studies, like we did a traffic, you know, impact study back in 2011 or so. But I don't know whether that's along the lines of what the EAC was thinking about when you mentioned stormwater and multiple municipalities.
I will definitely mention that to Jackie, since she's the lead on that. That's kind of... that's a great suggestion, and one that she hasn't mentioned. So okay. I will make sure that's on her radar. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Ruth? Hearing none. Thank you, Ruth.
You're welcome.
That brings us to the new business portion of tonight's meeting.
Mark, I have a couple of things. I know Marla wanted to give us an update on the return on investment committee. If I can let her start it.
With investment, it's return on environment.
Right.
Oh, my, sorry.
Go for it. Yeah, so I am on the a committee, which is countywide, that is doing a study on return on environment. And this is being modeled on a larger study that was done for the entire region of the Delaware Valley about 9 or 10 years ago now. And also a more recent study that was done a couple years ago for Chester County. So a consulting firm called eConsult Solutions is doing the study with the county. There is a committee of about 25 people, which I am one. It's a very diverse committee of people from all different jobs and all different places that have things to do with something to do with the environment. And what the study is going to look at is they are going to come up with actual dollar numbers to calculate the return on environment for open space. And open space has economic value in four ways: home and property value, so people who live close to open space, economic activity, job creation, environmental services, you know, things like, you know, the value of trees and with stormwater management, and direct use benefits for health and recreation. People go on trails, they go on their bikes at open space. So the plan is for this report to be done, I think, in the fall. We have another meeting actually tomorrow. So I'll just give another brief update at the next meeting on what happens at tomorrow's meeting. Oh, and I just wanted to add one other thing. So the whole concept of return on environment is when you take a piece of land and you build on it and you have impervious surface, it actually costs the municipality for every dollar they collect in tax revenue, it costs them more than a dollar in services. Now, for open space, it's the opposite. For every dollar in tax revenue, it costs the municipality like 10 cents in services for open space. And that's mostly for passive space. So open space has a lot of economic value.
Marla, question, are these meetings, can people watch them on Zoom, or how are they being conducted?
I will find out. I would assume it's a public meeting. We haven't had any members of the public, kind of like regional planning.
Yeah.
Okay. But I will find out.
Okay.
Like I said, the first one was in March, and we have another one tomorrow. I think they're going to be every 2 or 3 months when the consultant has more to report. Okay. And what we're going to be talking about tomorrow is choosing some case studies to include into the report.
Okay. Thank you. Mark, next one.
Yes, I had actually two things come in since we posted the agenda that I was hoping just to get taken care of tonight rather than wait until later. We had a request from the Heidelberg United Church of Christ to use the fire police at their barbecue drive-through dinner planned for Saturday, May 22nd from 3 to 5 p.m. They did this in the fall, and they've done this in the past, so... the board approves the use of the fire police by different organizations in the town and in Schwanksville. So Heidelberg United Church of Christ is looking to have the fire police help out with their barbecue on May 22nd.
Okay. Any questions for Mark on this? I know we need a motion, right?
Just an okay.
Yeah. You just need a no objection.
Consensus. Yeah. Are there any objections to having our
none whatsoever?
No.
Great. Thank you.
All right. We'll just put a plan in, plug in there for them. If you would like some barbecue on May 22nd from 3 to 5, the Heidelberg Church would love to see you at 251 Perky Omen Avenue in Schwanksville.
Great. Well, it's good to see people gathering again. That's a good sign.
Yep. The other item I got today was a request to connect to the public sewer. We've had a home under construction at 33 Moorhead for quite a while. Moorhead is a little alleyway off of Woodside. They've been working on this house and need to come down through the alleyway and then connect into our sewer main in Woodside. So they're asking permission from the board to make that connection. Carol has been working with their engineer and will continue to work with their engineer so that everything is done to the standards that we needed to be done for. Again, this just came in this afternoon. If it's too early and you want more information, we can push this off, but I thought I'd bring it up just in case. So this is Moorhead, the property in the back left corner of Moorhead Road. This isn't an exact replica, but they'll come out of the house and then down the alley into our sewer main, which is in Woodside.
So that's a gravity connection, Mark?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct, Carol?
Yes, it would actually be a sewer lateral to connect by gravity to our existing main. So this is a individual lateral they're proposing, not an extension of the publicly owned system.
So as I understand it, they're shouldering the cost and they're just asking permission to poke it in. Is there any reason, Carol or Mark, why we should not do this. It seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I agree. So they are in the sewer service area. I can't see a reason that you would object to their connection, but by section 123-3 of the township code, all connections get approved by the Board of Supervisors.
I have no objection.
I see no reason not to move forward with it.
And no objection.
No objection.
I have no objection. Is that sufficient, Mark, or do you need something more from us?
Why don't we just make a motion? Real quick.
One quick question, Carol, or Mark. What is going on with the home that's sort of in between there? Are they connected at this point, or?
They're not, and they weren't planning to connect at this time. So they would run their own lateral in the road, in the alleyway.
So they can't. Okay.
Yeah, they weren't ready to do it together.
And they don't want to pay the guy just to put a stub in there?
They can't put a stub in a lateral. You can't two homes in one lateral.
I understood. Okay.
All right.
So I'll make the... Go ahead, Marla.
No, you go ahead. I'll second.
All right. I'll make the motion that we approve the request for 33 Moorhead to connect, to install a lateral to connect to our sanitary sewer system.
And I will second.
Chuck Geiser makes the motion. Marla Hexter seconds. Is there any other further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion that Chuck Geiser just made to allow 33 Moorhead to connect to our centralized sewer system, say aye.
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 Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Great. Thank you. Is there anything else, Mark? I thought you had.
I did have we got a brief note from Natural Lands Trust that the Furia property, we talked about this property over on Delphi Road several months ago. It might have actually, I think it was maybe 1 year ago exactly. They have a cash offer for someone to purchase the property. They did want to reach back out to the township because we did show some interest with Natural Lands Trust at that time to see if there's anything that we would like to do. They are planning on doing the closing within 6 months, so that would be kind of the time frame from what I'm understanding. But I just wanted to make sure that I brought it to your attention and get any opinions that you had.
Hey, Mark, I think at a minimum we should write a letter of thanks to both parties involved, thanking them for thinking about bringing us to the attention of the township. And then I guess we'll have to decide whether I don't want to discuss any further whether we would, but I think at a minimum we should thank them for bringing this to our attention.
Okay. Well, that would be both Nat Lands and the Furies, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Or whoever is representing the Furies.
Yeah, I have their realtor's information. I can get that to them. And
yeah, this might be a little bit early on in for our township and its open space thing, and I don't know the merits, or that's subject for somebody else to discuss.
Okay, I will do that and see where that leads, and I'll try to have some more conversation with Natural Lands.
Okay.
Or any other questions?
That's all I have. Oops, sorry.
Yeah. Any other questions for Mark on this issue? Is there any objections to the what Dan said in terms of directing Mark to send the letter? I'm fine with it. Terry, Marla?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Okay, that brings us to public comment. We have two comments from the public I can see so far, three.
Warren, go ahead and there you go.
Well, following that discussion about the open space issue, has the board moved forward on doing anything towards forming an open space committee?
We are working on that. We have currently have four applications. So we're waiting to get at least one more application. We need five to get the committee moving. So I know we've been putting some feelers out there looking to get an additional couple people. I mean, we were looking for seven. So we are kind of just in the waiting phase and waiting to get some more volunteers, but hope to get that moving soon.
Thank you.
I was hoping to give a plug for it on Thursday night if we get enough people.
Phil?
Can everyone hear me?
Yeah,
I just wanted to make a public statement concerning the Polycom Trust project and sort of the way that they had insinuated that the township was an impediment to their progression. I will speak solely as a member of the Planning Commission since 1999 and present, when the then Little property came before us by THP, which later became what we know as the Melbourne Hill project. In no time whatsoever and no reviews of that project did the Lower Frederick Township Planning Commission ever create an impediment or try to thwart that project moving forward. As a matter of fact, many months would go by when we never heard anything from the developer. And it was, just a matter of trying to figure out what was happening with that project so we could see that to a successful conclusion. And I think that the other thing that the board needs to understand too is that our ordinances that were suggested that have thwarted them in the progression of their project recently were all done to try to better our township and not to try to create any kind of situation that was negative towards the residents and members of our community. So that's my public statement. And I think that, most of the board was not present in 2003 when that project originally came forward. So I think you should be aware of that. And incidentally, Mr. Goldthrip, who was representing the project currently, was the original presenter for TH Properties at that time. So that track record affiliated with them has a longevity that you should also be aware of. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil.
Brian, you're good.
Thank you. Good evening again. This is Brian Hill, 11 Ziegler-Ville Road. And also in comment with regards to the board decision tonight regarding the extension of their project. I appreciate your attentiveness to this decision, but I do also want to bring to your attention that each one of the board members there's no negative impact on your home. This impact has now projected onto homeowners that do have public access into the new septic plant. Your decision tonight severely impacted the township by approximately $400,000. There every year after about another $32,000 to $33,000 worth of revenue coming into paying off that outstanding bill for that project. So again, I appreciate your attentiveness and wanting to make sure that the ordinances are upheld, but we also need to take in consideration that these decisions do have impact on residents in our community.
Thank you, Brian. Mark, is there any other public comment?
That is all I see at this time.
Okay, that brings us to adjournment. A motion to adjourn.
Make that motion.
I will second that.
Terry Bird makes the motion. Dan Orff seconds. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries aye. Unanimously. Good night.
Thank you all. Good night.
Good night. Good night. Thanks, Peter.